A Holocaust survivor and childhood friend of one of history's most tragic figures has a message for the world about genocide. We haven't really learned. Ava Slosh was a neighbor of Anne Frank, the young Jewish girl whose famous diary detailed her family's life in hiding during the Nazi occupation of the Netherlands during the Second World War. Miss Slosh was just 13 when her own family of four was also forced into hiding in Amsterdam. Her father and brother were murdered at the Auschwitz-Birkenau concentration camp, and after the war, Ava's mother married Otto Frank, the father of her childhood friend. Ms. Slosh was at the UN in Geneva, which is hosting an exhibition about Anne Frank's life in connection with the International Day of Commemoration of the Victims of the Holocaust. Bronwyn Cowley asked her how she first met Anne Frank.
We lived both in the Merwede Plain, and there were small apartments, and of course no gardens. And so after school, all the children always came out to play in the street. So after school, we met little girls, lot of little girls, boys, everything. We played games, marbles, or hopscotch, or skipping. I was a new child because I came in February 14. Anne had been there already for years. She was really a Dutch girl. And so when she heard I came from Vienna, she said, oh, you must come up to my father. He will speak German to you, which was very nice because I didn't speak much Dutch. That's how I met the family. But I was through already experience in Vienna and in Belgium. I had already experienced anti-Semitism, so I was not so outgoing. I was quite shy, which I wasn't in Vienna originally. But, you know, I didn't feel so easy in a foreign country. And Anne was very sure of herself, oversure, I thought, you know. And she always wanted to be the center of attention. And she was a big chatterbox. And at school, she was called Mrs. Quack Quack. But nevertheless, you know, I looked up at her really. I really admired her for her knowledge. We went in both families the same day. We disappeared into hiding. That was in June 1942. And then I never ever saw her again.
Before that, when you were still playing together as little girls, were you about 11 or 12, is that right?
11 and 12, yeah. I was just 13 then when we went into hiding, and so was Anne. She was just 1 month younger than me. I was born in May and she in June.
And I believe she flirted with your older brother.
Well, she wanted to. She was very interested in boys, and my brother was a handsome young man, and he very musical. He played guitar and sang, and so when she heard that an older brother, she wanted to come and visit. But, you know, a little girl the age of his little sister, he wasn't interested. He later, luckily, had once a girlfriend who was more his age.
You've just said that when you finally had to leave, you and Anne and your families, you never saw her again. What is your last memory of her?
Well, I can't really remember, you know. I mean, I know that we all kept it secret. We didn't tell that we were going to disappear. So I only knew that sister had heard as well the same call-up notice to be deported, like my brother. By that time, it was really dangerous to go out in the street. So I don't think the last week of freedom still, I don't think we saw each other.
How much did you know about what was going on at that time? Were you scared?
We were all scared. We were scared that especially my brother or my father would be arrested, because those were the people they went after first. But till my father told us that we were going to hiding and that we were going into two different places, because nobody said he can't find a family who would take four people. And I was upset because I wanted to stay especially with my brother. We were very close. And so he said to me, if we go to two different places, the chance that two of us will survive is bigger. And that was actually a thing. I was 13 years old that I realized it is a matter of life and death. And that really scared me.
Your father was a very wise man. Do you remember, well, his last advice to you on the train when you were going towards Auschwitz?
Yeah. Well, you know, he was very, 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 he was a very good, I mean, we only were two children, but he as a family man, you know, for him the family was the most important thing, and that he couldn't look after us anymore was for him really very, very sad. And so he tried to give us advice to always helping each other, and especially wash our hands after we've been to the toilet and try to keep clean so that we wouldn't get ill. And, you know, there was no hygiene whatsoever in Auschwitz. So, you know, it was so ridiculous that when I thought back that he said wash heads, or, you know, there was just no washing whatsoever.
But it was his way of trying to protect you as much as he could.
He didn't know. We had no idea really what was going to happen. Oh, of course, we were going to be killed. Well, then you didn't need to be careful. We didn't know that we were going to Auschwitz in the train. And there were camps. I mean, many transport went to camps where people were not killed immediately. They were hard working. And then when they were too weak, then very often they were sent to Auschwitz to be killed. But the chance that we were going to a labor camp was there still. But there were camps like Treblinka where there was no selection. If you were 20 or 30 or a good working or a strong person, the whole transport by arrival went immediately to be gassed. So we could have been just as well sent there.
I believe that the last time you saw your father was by chance in Auschwitz-Birkenau. What happened on that occasion?
Well, for me it was in one way a wonderful occasion, but for him it was, I think it was a death sentence for him, because my mother had been selected to be killed, and for 3 months I assumed she had been killed. It was in the middle of winter, might have been December, and I had terrible open toes. I was starving, I was freezing, and I was nearly on the point of giving up. I worked in the Weberei, and they called me out. A capo came and said, "You're wanted outside." And I said, "Oh God, what now?" And I go outside, and my father stood there. Very, very thin, but still recognizable. And of course, I fell in his arms. And of course, the next question was, "Where is Mutti?" And I told him that she had been gassed. And this man crumpled in front of my eyes. And, you know, I think later when he was on the death march, probably perhaps Heinz died first. He thought his wife is dead. He didn't think I could have survived. I think he just gave up. You know, very often people ask if you have guilt that you survived. I said, no. Definitely not. But this is, I feel guilty that I told him. But of course, I had to, and he wanted to know. And it was for me a comfort that I could share it with him. But I'm sure if he would have known, he would have fought. He would have not given up. He was such a strong man, physically and mentally.
For the younger generations, it's unfathomable to think of what you have been through and so many other people who were in your position. What can we do to keep the memory alive?
First of all, we are still around, so perhaps 10 years you might still hear the story from people. So you will hear, you will never be forgotten. But of course, it's not the same if you hear it from the people who have gone through it. But we have hope as well that the second generation, so they haven't said yet, but a lot of them might take over to tell our story.
Why is it so important to tell your story?
Well, because we haven't really learned. You know, if no genocides would be around anymore, I think we would be quiet. We would enjoy our life and not keep on and on and tell the story. But unfortunately, I think it's perhaps even worse, because it is, at the time it was in one country, it was Germany, but now it seems everywhere there is prejudice and discrimination and terrorist attacks. We are living in a very, very, very dangerous world, and as well, which has nothing to do with the Holocaust, but still we are ruining our planet. And we really, really have to put all our brain together and work to stop all this and give our young people a chance. Otherwise, there won't be any human race left eventually.
Why did you decide to share your story?
Well, that came by chance through an Anne Frank exhibition which came to London in 1986. And of course, my mother and me were invited. And it was Ken Livingstone who was at the time the head of the, well, like a mayor. And was at head table. And he said, come and sit with us. And very innocently, I thought, well, all right, I can sit there. But I'd never, ever spoken about anything what had happened. And at the end, he said, and now, Eva, we want to say something. Well, I didn't want to say anything. I wanted to hide under the table. But I saw all those 200 pairs of eyes looking at me expectingly. And so, after thinking a few moments and not really knowing what to say, everything what that for 40 years I had suppressed it came out, and it was a great relief. And it was a watershed, and a real, first of all, I realized that people wanted to know that I have a message.